Good morning. My name's Garland Nixon. Everybody wants to rule the world. Good music, and how appropriate. I'm here with
Mark Levine.
And we're standing in today for Gloria Minot, her show that I listen to every day. I absolutely love it. We've traded places with her.
We're the News Views team. We're normally heard Friday at 6 o'clock, so you should check us out there.
Yeah, every Friday. I'm on every Friday, 6 to 7 p.m. The name of the show is News Views, talking politics, social issues, and all kinds of interesting things. Garland and Mark here, and we're going to talk about, there's so many things, but we're going to start off talking about the issue of marching in protest. On Saturday, there was a protest, there was a rally, you know, there's any number of things you could call it. I think the term they used was rally, and there were a lot of thoughts on it. I have a few, Mark has a few. I'm going to, you know, I'm all for it. And then I have something that maybe could be considered, I don't know, some may consider it negative, some may maybe consider throwing a question mark at it. What we're going to talk about is the effectiveness of it, for one thing. How effective is it? You know, I mean, does the system, you know, I'm doing my air quotes, does the system really care if you protest? Does it make a difference? Did the big rally in 1963 in D.C., was that what did it? Is that what made a change? Or was it the people out on the streets? Was it the inside, working inside
and outside of the system? I think the march of 1963 played a major role.
So I'm gonna pass the ball over to Mark and start off and get some thoughts. What are your thoughts on the issue of rallying, protest? What makes a difference? Why? Or what doesn't make a difference? What are your thoughts, Mark?
I think that we've seen a lot of protests in the wake of Ferguson, in the wake of Eric Garner's murder, in the wake of all these incidents that have been going on. And I think there's everything from sort of an inchoate anger where people run out in the streets and yell and scream to what happened in D.C. on Saturday, very organized, peaceful, thousands of people marching on the mall. And I think that the most effective protests really are the ones that, for one, are continuing. Mm-hmm. Not just the anger of the moment, but continue week after week, month after month, the kind that teach people. But more importantly, more than anything else, I think the best protests are the ones that have a goal. Mm-hmm. Martin Luther King's March on Washington has a specific goal. He wanted specific civil rights laws passed, and those were passed in the Civil Rights Act, many of them, at least the political ones, if not the economic ones, in the Voting Rights, Civil Rights Act of 1964, 1965. The one thing I would really like to see in these protests is people asking for specific things. Mm-hmm. Body cameras for police officers.
Right, right, right.
Special prosecutors so that prosecutors who work with police officers every day aren't the same prosecutors that then give the police officers a pass when these events happen. I just think it's so important to have focused protests rather than what Martin Luther King talked about. He talked about sort of the riot as being a protest without I'm paraphrasing now. I don't have the exact words, but without a cause, without a focus, that it was you know, the anger, the inside, which is real, but not likely to achieve any as much as going out there and focusing on specific goals.
Yeah, I think good point, because what that brings to mind initially is what happened in Ferguson. You know, the initial reaction, which was very emotional, and it was. Here's the way I like to I would view what you just said, that a protest should be tactics within the context of a grand strategy. That, you know, if you ever talked to any of the people involved in the civil rights movement, and or dealt with any of the people, or had an opportunity to listen to some of the people, I've had a chance to listen to, you know, Reverend Fauntleroy and Mr. Conyers and some of the people speak. What you realize was there were a lot of very brilliant people. And they had a grand strategy. It was never, you know, the way I always put it is, I never want to be the chihuahua barking as a tractor trailer goes by down the road. It doesn't even hear you. They had a grand strategy, and within the context of the strategy, protesting or civil disobedience or all these other things were part of, say, the outside strategy. Now, the other part you said, they had an inside strategy, which was, we have very specific legislature, which we are lobbying for, and we are trying to focus on particular legislators to get it through, or put pressure on the president in one way or another. So it wasn't people screaming, shaking their fists, saying, you know, power to the people, I'm angry. That was, yes, there were that was part of it. I think part of a protest is this, Mark. You have to get the people who feel aggrieved, you have to get them upset. You have to get them emotional, because many times what happens is, and I see this as far as what's happening now with a lot of people feeling, you know, put upon by law enforcement, etc. People get to the point where they're so beat down that they come to learn to live with a certain level of oppression.
Oh, sure.
You know, that, okay, yeah, I live in this neighborhood, the police treat you this way, but that's just the way it is. And I think part of protesting is you got to wake people up to get them to say, look, that's not just the way it is. You don't have to put up with it. You can do something. You can fight back, even if fighting back is only coming to a protest and bringing your body there or carrying a sign.
So here's the quote I was looking for that I was badly paraphrasing because
very badly
because I am not Martin Luther King or anything close to it. He said, a riot is the language of the unheard.
That's right, okay.
Now, he meant, as I read that, two things by that. One is that when people who are unheard by peaceful protests, by normal means, by going there and asking, peacefully assembling, that's when they turn to riot. That's when they turn to violence. I also think it has a double meaning. I also think that a riot can be unheard if people take the wrong message from the riot. If they take the message that the things people want are impossible or led by violence, or
those that oppose saying, well, you see, those people are unruly.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Those
well,
who oppose
and
them.
It changes the subject.
Right.
From police violence. Martin Luther King famously said that if the entire, he was talking about the Black Power movement and how it was, he felt a minority movement, but certainly a strong minority back in the 60s. And he said that if everyone were to become violent, he would be a minority of one standing up for nonviolence.
Right.
And some people, I think, attack King sort of for pacifism. King's view was not that only that nonviolence was good because violence is bad. His view was also that nonviolence was more effective than violence.
Yeah.
As a matter of effectiveness, totally apart from the morality, which he also believed in. And so I would say there's sort of three types of protests. There is the peaceful protest guaranteed by the Constitution, freedom of assembly, the kind that happened just last weekend where you go in the mall and you march for whatever cause you believe in, and hopefully you educate people and it achieves something. The March on Washington, obviously,
right.
Classic example. Then example two would be civil disobedience. Mm-hmm. That would be peaceful marches that are against the law. That would be things like blocking traffic. Martin Luther King in Birmingham jail, when he was not given a protest to march, they're protests where you don't harm anybody, but they're against the law.
Right.
Civil disobedience.
Didn't Martin Luther King make a statement about something about if you're doing something against the law, if the law is wrong? I can't remember what it was.
The law is unjust, that there's no law at all.
Something to that effect.
And then the third protest is violence, where you rise up in violence and burn things down and
the French Revolution, et cetera.
Sure. Absolutely, or the American Revolution, or
but look what but the other part of it is look what happened in the French Revolution. The people who rose up ended up being just as bad, if not worse. You know, they took over and then they went out and it wiped out the people.
Right,
who,
that's right.
You know,
it became the Reign of Terror.
Yeah,
that's absolutely right. That often happens in a violent revolution. They can't really control it. I have a lot of sympathy for the people of Syria who are trying to overthrow Assad, and then now a bunch of terrorist groups have come in and co-opted that, and the Syrian people are in big trouble now. So I would argue those are sort of the three levels of protest. And I would argue that the first protest, the peaceful protest in the mall, is always justified. I don't care what your cause is. I may not support your cause.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're doing a march to ban abortions, I'm not going to support your cause, but I would fully support your right to
Absolutely.
March, your right to be there. And even some people I really hate have and say hateful things can go for have a right to assemble and make their case.
Let me give you an example. You know, for many people that don't. So for those who haven't heard me before, don't know our backgrounds a little bit. I was a law enforcement officer for 27 years. I retired. I was actually a appointee of the governor with a Homeland Security Review Committee. So my background is in law enforcement, and I was considered a police official in Maryland, and I am currently. Have been in the past and currently once again a member of the board of directors for the state of Maryland for the American Civil Liberties Union, which means
you're basically a contradiction in terms.
Totally. Right? No, but I was always.
You're an ACLU police officer.
You're
a party of one.
I was always an ACLU guy. I was just kind of a mole as a police officer.
You're a party of one.
Yeah. I was
in that intersecting circles, yeah. There's just Garland.
Yeah.
But
Mark, is background a little bit your background?
Yeah, no, I'm a constitutional attorney. I graduate of Yale Law School. I I've done a lot of protests. I helped lead the marriage equality movement. In fact, I wrote the bill in D.C.
And your undergraduate is in?
It's in economics.
Economics, there
actually.
You go.
And I ran for office myself, actually, and lost big time. But I did run for Congress in Northern Virginia and worked on the Hill for Congressman Barney Frank and Judiciary Committee, Homeless Care Committee.
So,
point is, I've worked inside and outside.
Now, I've got a question.
And that's how I think I know what's effective. Let me just quickly mention. Right, so the first protest is the peaceful protest. Mm-hmm. That's legal. The second one is civil disobedience.
Yeah.
Now, that one is nonviolent but illegal. And it's my view that civil disobedience is sometimes justified but not always justified. I'll just give you an example. A friend of mine found out that you could not dance in the Jefferson Memorial. And he was all upset that it's illegal, apparently.
It sounds like a Taliban law.
It's illegal to dance because it's considered desecration of the memorial. And he wanted to go out there and dance to say, hey, damn it, we have a right to dance. And I said to this friend of mine, who I won't mention by name on air, I said, you may be right about that, but to me, there are so many more important things going on in the world,
right, yeah.
So many more important injustices, that even though that would be civil disobedience, I wouldn't support that. Even if I think you're right, I think, you know, have a peaceful protest. Don't break the law to advocate for the right of a meaningless right.
Did he scream out, this injustice will not stand while he was dancing?
They actually arrested people for dancing in the Jefferson Memorial. So that's an example, I think, of a civil disobedience that is in my view, relatively frivolous. Versus, say,
frivolous.
Frivolous.
That is
right.
Whereas
Martin Luther King, obviously in a Birmingham jail where he was denied the right to protest and he sat there and insisted on his right and Selma and all those things. Those were grand things. And so I think civil disobedience requires a greater moment, a greater importance to go out there and actually break the law.
And the other part of it is some of the civil disobedience where it was legal for a person to discriminate and say, this particular group of people, I'm not going to serve them in our store. So what you were doing was illegal to sit in at a lunch counter or something because you were being discriminated against.
Well, that's right.
So that was...
The Woolworth Five and Dime protests were illegal.
They broke the segregation laws. But their particular point there was, if the law is so unjust...
That's right.
You know, or if the law is immoral and unjust, well, then civil disobedience
and that's why
can be the right thing.
A protest at the Woolworth Five and Dime or a march across Pettus Bridge, even those are illegal, you should be able to march across Pettus Bridge. You should be able to eat at the Woolworth Five and Dime. Whereas I'm not sure that blocking traffic, for example, when you're not angry at the traffic laws, you're not saying traffic laws are bad. You're not saying it's bad for cars to go on 395. You're saying police violence is bad. So to me, the march should be either at police stations or prosecutors or the Supreme Court building or Congress or the President, the White House. Those are better locations than making a bunch of motorists mad. I just don't think it helps.
Well,
helps
let me throw
cause.
Something out there. That kind of brings us into
And then just real quick, the third one would be violence.
Yeah.
And that's only justified in cases of real tyranny, where you really need to overthrow the entire system, revolution and so forth. And I think that's almost never justified, but sometimes it is.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so that brings that segues perfectly into the issue of peaceful protest and civil disobedience, where we don't separate them. We have a kind of a continuum that runs between civil disobedience and peaceful protest.
Well, we've seen that in the Ferguson.
Right.
We've seen all three, frankly.
Yeah, so
in response
as an
to
example,
Ferguson.
Yes.
Examples.
While, okay, the drivers on 395 or whoever you're blocking or, on, 8th Avenue in New York or wherever, they're not part of it. To an extent, sometimes civil disobedience, inconvenience, I'm going to use this broad term. I hate to use it, but I can't think of a better term. It works now. To kind of inconvenience the system, to kind of inconvenience everyone. I think sometimes it's necessary to inconvenience. If the average person gets inconvenienced, if people get inconvenienced in a grand way, oftentimes that causes them to put a little more pressure on politicians and saying, it's getting hard to drive in this city. This is a pain. Look, I don't care who's getting beat up by the police.
That's a tough question.
But I can't get to work.
But that's a tough question.
I can't get home. You guys got to do something. So there can't there be a level of effectiveness to civil disobedience and inconveniencing the system, as it were, as a whole?
I think that's the tough question. The question is, when you block traffic, do the people whose traffic is blocked, mm-hmm. do they become more sympathetic to your cause or less sympathetic
to your
cause?
Now, did you notice something? I don't know if I've read several articles on this. And what I saw, I don't know about the U.S. I don't know about the D.C. because D.C. is actually outside of the U.S. because they don't have any legal voting rights.
Occupied colony.
Yeah, right, yeah. But In New York, what was interesting was the stories I read where they interviewed drivers and they said, I understand. So many times, most of the drivers, they asked, you know what? Yes, it's an inconvenience, but I support these people and I understand.
Yeah, but now what are the drivers going to do? Are they going to now call their local assembly person? I mean, New York is an interesting case because mm-hmm. the mayor, Bill de Blasio, is very sympathetic mm-hmm. to the cause of the protests. What you have in New York, frankly, is you've got a borough gone wild. The Staten Island borough, people don't realize in New York City that the five boroughs have tremendous power.
Yeah, they have a borough chief, and yeah.
Well, I mean, the prosecutor in Staten Island is really the one that committed the great injustice in the Eric Garner case, and he's elected by the voters of Staten Island.
Yep.
And the boroughs really have a lot of separate power, much more so than you see in almost any other major city, because they were once counties and so forth.
And they're so huge, they're like basic cities.
Well, that's right. That's right. Although Staten Island's the smallest, and actually, the very different from the other four boroughs. It's much wider. It has less diversity. It has a lot of cops.
Much more conservative.
Police officers. It is the only one that's consistently Republican.
You know something else we're seeing? And that is, you know, you look at somewhere like, say, Egypt, where in Egypt, the army is a total different arm, political arm from the government, where there are those who argue the army is the real power in Egypt as opposed to the government. The government has to bend to the will of the army. You know, in New York, what do we see? We see the police chief and we see the police department, the mayor and the police department saying the mayor threw us under the bus. We see an instance where the, you know, kind of de facto army would be in the police department, which there's 32,000 police officers in New York.
That's bigger than many
armies. Bigger than a lot of armies in a lot of countries.
Yeah.
And a lot meaner than most. But they're actually kind of fighting back against the politicians, where they're kind of separating themselves out to a different political entity to be able to do whatever they want to.
Here's my view on New York and protests in general. Go to where the problem is. Don't block the streets in 8th Avenue, Manhattan. Block the streets in Staten Island.
Well,
if you have to get a whole bunch of people on the subway, they're not, well, I guess you take a ferry to Staten Island.
Yeah, right.
But get a whole bunch of people on the ferry and bring the people from Manhattan to Staten Island, block their streets. The people of Staten Island voted for this renegade prosecutor. They actually have something to blame. They voted for this guy that doesn't believe in prosecuting. And by the way, don't let anyone blame the grand jury. Grand juries do whatever prosecutors want them to do. The reason why Eric Garner's killer wasn't prosecuted is because blame the grand jury at all. So, it's the problem is the prosecutor. He's an elected official. He's elected by the voters of Staten Island. To me, rather than clog the streets of Manhattan where people are largely supportive, or frankly, 395, go to Staten Island. Go, if your problem is Congress wanting a law to have body cameras on police or to keep records on racial profiling or to make special prosecutors when prosecutors, go to Congress. Protest in front of the Capitol. If your problem is the Supreme Court, go to the Supreme Court. Your problem is the President of the United States, you don't think he's doing enough, go protest in front of the White House. My point is I think people should protest, you know, go to Ferguson, because actually I think D.C. is doing a much better job than it used to do, I have to say. I think Chief Lanier is one of the reasons why we don't see these things in D.C. as much as we used to.
Right.
And we do see them in New York and Missouri and elsewhere. So I just think that protesters should focus, if you can, more on where the trouble is.
Well, you know, let me make an argument, a little bit of an argument against it, not totally, but, you know, if you look at what happened in New York, the Attorney General of New York, after, you know, everybody freaked out, there's these huge protests and things are kind of falling apart, and clearly the government had to respond in some kind of way.
Sure.
They had to do something. Well, the Attorney General sent a letter to the governor that said, you can do this, I can't. What I want you to do is send a letter out that says, anytime there's a police-involved incident like this, the local prosecutor no longer handles it. That
right.
The attorney general's office
right.
handles it. That I'll send my guys in it
right.
so that there will not
and that
be...
Would be a great,
now,
that would be a great resolution.
So
that would be a legal resolution. It wouldn't just be a bunch of rights. That would be a powerful change.
My point is, one of the reasons that happened, I think, is because these humongous protests in New York City and all over. So to some extent, while there is an argument from the let's say the punitive perspective.
Well, let's put it this way:
of going to Staten Island and making those people pay. On the grand scheme of things, the broadness of this protest, I think, had the political effect.
Absolutely. So let me be very clear. Okay. The first level of protest, the peaceful legal protest, the right to assembly guaranteed by the Constitution, go out everywhere. Go out to the mall. Get a million people out on the mall. That's you don't have to go to Staten Island to do that. And that's good. And it shows you support a cause and it causes change. When it comes to civil disobedience, the second protest example I gave you, that's where I think if you're going to inconvenience people, at least inconvenience the people who are part of the problem rather than people who aren't part of the problem, I guess. That's my point about the civil disobedience aspect. And then, as I said, I think the violence part is pretty much never justified unless you've got a government, you know, mowing down people right and left, even more than they already are.
I was about to say,
even more than they already are.
Yeah. Now let me go a little more militant, Admar. Let me go out militant and conspiratorial and all that kind of fun stuff. We certainly do want to take some calls after 11:30, I think, but let me go out there. And I'm going to make an argument kind of somewhat against,
5880893, but we're going to take calls after 11:30.
Somewhat against the rally. Saturday, although I'm in favor of it, but I'm just throwing a different perspective out. I support it 100%, but let me throw a different perspective out there to think about. Okay, you're, quote, to some extent, you're angry at the system, you're fighting the system. Because there is the police officer that chokes the guy out.
Yeah.
And then there is the police.
When it was illegal then there's a police, under New York regulations.
Then there's the police department that supports him. Then there's the prosecutor who throws it. But then, here's the reality, too, and we all know this in America. When the cop gets, let's say he gets indicted and he goes to an all white jury and he choked out a black guy. Here's the truth. He walks every time. He walks every time.
There really aren't too many all white juries.
Yeah, but when there is, he walks every time.
But a lot of times they walk even when they're not all white juries.
It's
because
rare.
People presume that the police officer knew what he
And what do we see in Ferguson where they needed nine no's. Nays in order to throw it. There was nine white people in on the grand jury where they need 12 in New York. There was 14 whites. It was always for sure. Now, here's what I'm saying. So that is not about the numbers. That's about, let's argue with the system here for a second. One of the points that I've made to some people recently is that you got to inconvenience the system, and here's what I mean. Look. You say, okay, we're shaking our fist at the system. We're arguing against the system. When you go rally, the system, and I'm constantly using air quotes in front of Mark, so you know what I'm saying out there, and so you can picture me in here doing air quotes.
God loves those air quotes.
Yes, I love them. They just don't work so well on the radio.
They have a hard time on the radio.
Yeah, we're called on air quotes. How about that? We'll rename them. But the quote system said, okay, you guys want to have a rally? Yeah, here's a nice place. They built the mall for you, the great unwashed, the hoi polloi, when they get upset. Here's a nice place for you to go and for you to protest where you won't bug us too much. Then you went and they gave you a permit and said, tell you what, you guys want to protest the system? Yeah, you can do it between 11 and 3:45, but you got to be out of here by 4:30. Okay, we're going to... Are you really inconveniencing? Let me finish my thought, and then I'll give it to you. Are you really inconveniencing the system if the system builds a nice open space for you to protest and gives you a permit to protest there, and you protest exactly where and when they told you to protest? And I tell you why. Because I live down there in Pasadena, and I'm over, you know, like around the corner from my house, a friend of mine's house, right? And you know what they were doing, Mark, Saturday? They walked down to the community pier and they fed the local geese. They didn't even know they were, because nobody's protesting in their neighborhood. They're feeding the geese with the kids at the community pier. Here's what I say. If you want to upset the system, you know where you go, you know where I would say we're going to have a rally? I'd say we're going to have a rally on River Road in Potomac, and we're going to block River Road and Democracy Boulevard. We're going to go to, what is that, Old Georgetown Pike or whatever in McLean? We're going to go to McLean, and we're going to have 10,000 people walking down the road, and we're going to block the roads in McLean. I'd say we're going to go to the community pier down there where Garland lives in Pasadena, where there's three black people around, and we're going to block the community pier. We're going to go to the areas where, and all in nonviolent, but we're not going to march around downtown on 395. We're going to go to the areas where people don't see it. We're going to inconvenience the system because you know what? Because the people in McLean, because the people in Potomac are going to call, they are legislators, and they're going to say, man, we got to do something about that. We got all these crazy young people and progressives and black people and students and all these people marching up and down the road. They blocked River Road. The pool boy can't get here to clean the pool. I got a car that's supposed to pick me up to take me to the airport so I can go to my house in the Bahamas. I can't do anything. I'll have to call in a helicopter.
And that might cause people, that might cause discomfort, to crack down harder. Here's the thing. I'd like to change the word block to educate. All right? Get 10,000 people down to your community pier with signs.
There ain't enough people. Examples. Go to Potomac or McLean. They don't care about the community.
Whatever. With signs.
They'll feed the ducks on Sunday morning.
Hand out examples. Show a brochure of 100 black faces, each with three lines about each of these young unarmed black men killed by police. Talk to people. Get out to community centers. Go to churches. Go to synagogues. Go to mosques. Go out there. Go to schools. I think that dialogue between people, because I actually think there's a lot of sympathy out there for people like Eric Garner. I mean, tremendous sympathy. Even if you had some on the right have sympathy for him. And that if you go out there with the purpose of being militant, a purpose of turning people off, a purpose of making people angry, if that's your goal,
no,
to make people angry, then I think you'll succeed in making people angry. But if your goal is to educate and get legislation and get things changed, then I think that's what you'll succeed in doing. And if you want anger and you want people to be really upset and you want the police to be more militant and you want people to try to break up protests and you want to, you know, fan the flame and pour gasoline on it, and some people want to do that, I think you'll succeed in your goal. If your goal is special prosecutors, your goal is body cameras, your goal is education, your goal is sympathy for the movement, I think you'll get that. And to me, this is the classic difference between the Martin Luther King and the Black Power movement. The Black Power movement was angry. They had a right to be angry. No one doubted the right to be angry. But in terms of effectiveness, I would argue the effectiveness is when your goal is change and not when your goal is anger and burning things down.
Well, here's what I'm thinking. Now, I'm not advocating anything violent or angry.
I understand.
I'm simply saying you march in the areas where there are a lot of wealthy people and a lot of people in power.
I support that.
And
I support
that. They see, and it's right in front of them.
I support
that.
They
can't say, well, what do you know? Look on C-SPAN. There's a bunch of people.
Can you march alongside River Road, or
sure,
do you have to block River Road?
But if you're going to block a road.
I see a distinction between the two.
But if you're going to block a road, don't block 395. Block River Road.
Well, that's true.
Towards
well, that's true.
If you're going to
that's
block
true.
A road,
that's true.
Don't block a road downtown where they don't care. Block a road where the people of power
absolutely.
Are.
Absolutely. No. I completely agree with you. Yeah. That's why I said bring the protest to where it should be. Why I said go to Staten Island, don't go to Manhattan. I agree with bring the protest where it should be. What I'm saying is blocking, which is the civil disobedience aspect, that I think, depending on where you are, that can be counterproductive.
Now, let me throw another part about, because what you said about education, and I think that's where there's the kind of the post-enlightenment, pre-enlightenment thinking debate goes on. Okay. When it comes to protests and things like that, there is the number one, education is about facts. Mm-hmm. And information.
Sure.
The belief that if you give people facts and information, that will change their minds and they'll do things different. As opposed
sometimes
to...
Sometimes it does.
Here's the
it
other
doesn't.
Part. And I think, and this is something I think. I think that's why the Republicans, where the right wing, often has more success than the left.
Because they got the emotion.
The last thing on their minds are facts.
That's true. It's all emotion.
Now, what is it? Yeah. It's about scaring people.
Right.
It's about upsetting people. Or it's about telling people they can get something even when they can't get it.
But we can scare and upset people with facts.
Yeah.
The two aren't mutually exclusive. We have Eric Garner. All you got to do is watch the video. And any right-minded person is sickened. Black, white, rich, poor, indifferent. You watch that video. You see a guy being harassed for selling untaxed cigarettes, which apparently we don't even have evidence he was doing at that point. And he's no threat. He's not harming the cops. He's upset. But... and you see the chokehold, you see I can't breathe. I just think that showing that video to as many Americans as possible, that should be a goal.
I would hope you're right, but I think you do really have to cause a lot of emotions. You have to cause people to look at it. And civil rights, what happened when people saw everything that was going on? And keep in mind,
that's why I said, see the
where were the
Garner
people
video.
Marching? They were marching in these downtown areas where they weren't supposed to be.
That's right.
That's why they started turning water hoses on them. If they marched in the black communities, once they started marching in these downtown white towns where they weren't supposed to
be. There I agree with
you. There was this
bring the protest to where the problem is.
Bring it to where the power structure
the people of power, the people of money.
You have to inconvenience. Don't scare them. You want to inconvenience them. We got to take a quick break. Let me give out the number, 202-588-0893. 202-588-0893. Garland Nixon. I'm here with Mark Levine. The name of the show is News Views every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m.
Except we're now in the Monday block.
Yeah, today we're Monday. That's where we normally are.
Places
with Gloria. She had put together some brilliant stuff Friday, the day before the protest. And now we're following it up. Be right back.
Another police killing of a black man. Another grand jury deciding not to indict. Not for murder, not for manslaughter, not for assault, not even for reckless endangerment. It doesn't seem to matter the age. What counts is the color. We live in a land of impunity, at least for those in power. Join us on December 16th from 5:30 to 7:30 at Busboys and Poets 5th and K. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! I'll be talking about the silenced majority, stories of uprisings, occupations, resistance, and hope. Tickets include, a copy of my latest book and light hors d'oeuvres. Please call 202-588-0999, extension 344. That's 202-588-0999, extension 344, or go online at WPFWFM.org. That's WPFWFM.org. I can't wait to see you there December 16th at Busboys and Poets 5th and K.
202-588-0893, Garland Nixon and Mark Levine. The name of the show is News Views. I'm standing in for Gloria today, but it's always on Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. The lines are completely full. We've got plenty of people out there that want to talk. Let me give you my number. Let me tell you how to get in touch with us first. If you want to email me, my email address is garlandn, that's N as in Nixon, garlandn@gmail.com, @GarlandNixon on Twitter, or Garland, GARLANDNIXON, Garland Nixon on Facebook, or GarlandN@gmail.com.
You can follow me on Twitter at Mark Levine Talk, MarkLevineTalk. TALK. Please remember the E at the end of my last name. Or you might confuse me with some really awful human being. I'm also on Facebook.com/MarkLevineTalk. My website, MarkLevineTalk.com. And I want to, when you call in, talk about all kinds of effective protests. I'll just throw one out there.
Yeah, give us 1 minute on D.C. marijuana.
Yeah, one we'll out there. The United States Congress just passed one of those, they call it Cromnibus bill. Because it's a continuing resolution, that's the CR, and an omnibus bill. It's one of these bills where they don't legislate, they don't look at specific. They just throw a billion things together and continue the government for a few months. That in itself is a bad thing. But one of the things they threw in there is they completely overturned the D.C. marijuana referendum.
Possibly.
Well, as I understand it in the bill, basically says that D.C. can't regulate the use of marijuana, and if you can't regulate it, they basically can't legalize it.
Well,
the lawyers are still looking at all of it.
Yeah, because the argument that's being made is that the law was enacted on the date that it was passed. So that if this would mean, there are a lot of attorneys now arguing that says what this means is that because it's enacted, it doesn't take any money to enact it. So that the law is that it would still be legal, but they couldn't do the regulation, which means it's like a giant open air drug.
I hope that fancy, brilliant D.C. lawyers, and I'm willing to help them, will find some legalese way around it. But the larger point is this. Whatever
they made every attempt to stop it.
Well, that's my point. Whatever they accomplished, there's no question that Republicans in Congress, and let's face it, some cowardly Democrats who opposed it but went along with it, basically said, we don't respect D.C. home rule. That four states have legalized marijuana. We respect Colorado. We respect Washington State. We do not respect Washington, D.C. The people there have no right to rule themselves. The same states' rights Republicans basically said, you have no right
in
the nation's capital.
They don't believe
in state rights. And so the other question comes, how do we protest this? Because whatever you felt about the marijuana referendum, and I support it, but even if you were against it, you've got to respect the right of D.C. to have self-rule.
I've got it.
And they keep, they've done it with guns, they've done it with abortion, they're constantly taking away D.C. self-rule, and in my view, we need to have constant, you should have a constant D.C. What I would do is I would put up a booth, a sign, a permanent booth right outside the Capitol, because I guarantee you tourists from the 50 states outside of D.C. don't even know that D.C. doesn't have a vote in Congress, don't even know that D.C. is the last occupied colony. Put up a permanent booth with information so that Americans come in right in front of the Capitol, because this needs to be a permanent protest until D.C. becomes a state or gets some form
of self-rule. I got better. You can go in the buildings, the Rayburn building,
well, that's
the Longworth
true too.
Building. 10,000 people
from D.C.
wandering the halls.
That would be great.
Going to the,
great.
All the Republicans who were against it.
Yep.
Going, wandering in and out of their offices
all day long.
But
they can't keep you out. Those are public buildings.
Stopping to talk to
knocking
their staff
on their doors. And if they turn you away, sit in their offices. Have 100 people sitting in their offices
every
waiting.
Day.
And you have a right to do that. That's a great
1,000.
Idea.
Just flood their
offices.
Well,
100 in each office.
Yeah, and say, okay, you guys, so are you going to do
that's
what you want?
That's a great idea. Give us D.C. rule now. That's an awesome idea. Have a sit-in at the Capitol. Yeah. Not violent, not breaking the laws.
And
do it
for a month, 2 months. Say, all the time.
Every day
say,
until we have D.C.
self-rule. Okay.
That's a great idea, guys.
So we're starting on line one. And I certainly also want to thank Mike Nocella, who's on the board here, because if Mike wasn't running the board, if he wasn't doing his job, this is what you'd hear. That's pretty much me it without
that's
Mike.
That's pretty boring.
That's it. There are those who would argue that it may be a better show than the two of us running our mouth. But right now, we're going to go to line one. Welcome to WPFW. You are on the air.
Who do we have?
Who do we have on the air?
Hey, this is Joseph from Arlington.
Joseph, thank you for calling.
Welcome to the show.
Hey, I wanted to shine a light on an issue related to this police abuses that a lot of people I don't think are aware of, and it has to do with open records laws and just the right of the citizen to be able to investigate a case is systematically covered up, because many of these open records laws have what's called a law enforcement exemption. And what that is when a case doesn't result in a conviction, many states disallow the release of the records in the case. So things like in-dash cameras, reports, things like that. And all of this goes to how these incidents are investigated. And so you guys were talking about effective protest. I would say that an effective protest is to utilize these open records laws as citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And when you've got a prosecutor that's not doing his job, investigate all of his cases. File open records requests for everything that prosecutor's done. And put a shine a light on what kind of person he is. Because I guarantee you, you're going to find that the investigations are not done well. The average citizen can read these reports and they can see that things are not going the way they should be.
Joseph, that's a great idea. We have sunshine open records laws in a number of states. It actually differs from state to state. But one of the things we need to do is find out what these people are investigating. I don't understand, frankly, the Staten Island prosecutor at all. I can't even make a good faith case. You can make, and I don't like it, and I don't agree, but you can make a good faith case. In Ferguson, there were no cameras. There are different witnesses. Maybe that he felt he couldn't get a conviction because the people said he said he did.
Because I've dealt with prosecutors. If they feel that they can't get a conviction, they won't even go to the grand jury. They'll say, I can't move forward to the grand jury until you bring me more evidence.
Right.
That's what the prosecutor should have done
in Ferguson.
No, that's what he should have done. He had plenty of charge. But we don't want to get sidetracked.
But my point is that in Eric Garner's killing, I can't even imagine a case that wouldn't find guilt beyond a reasonable doubt for something. If not murder, at least voluntary manslaughter.
Two words I always use, Mark. Every show, Kelly Thomas. Kelly Thomas. Yeah. If anybody thinks that the cops can't beat you to death on camera while you scream for your life, and people run over to the police officers and say you're killing him, can you imagine that? Two guys are beating a little teeny skinny homeless guy to death. Yeah. The guy's screaming for his life. Citizens run over to the cops and say these words: "You're killing him."
Right.
The guy dies. And they're found not guilty. If you can find
in a video that, so brutal that I couldn't finish watching.
Kelly Thomas was white, but he was homeless,
right?
And he was mentally
underclass.
Ill, so he's underclass. So the cops beat him to death and they walk.
But my point is that we need to. Joseph is right. We need to get records of these cases
because
it's the only way to hold them to account.
And I wanted to throw something else out there. I'm glad he brought that up. Right now, the ACLU, which I'm a member of the board for Maryland, has a case that we're dealing with over on the Eastern Shore, where and a black woman, a state police officer, Maryland state police officer, called her to ask her about a case that she wasn't involved in or accused of or anything like that, but for some information. After this officer, a white state police officer, finished talking to her, he thought that the record, leaving a message, he thought the recording was off, but it wasn't. Mm. And he proceeded to go on telling whoever he worked with about how he's dealing with these N-words. He refused to, this guy referred to this citizen using the N-word and left this tape on her, and left this on her tape. So she checks her tape, and there's a state trooper. Oh yeah, this is, a trooper so-and-so, blah, 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 about this case. And then he thinks she's hung up, and he goes, oh yeah, they're dealing with these N-words, blah, 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 blah. But at any rate,
She
filed a complaint with state police.
Yeah.
They did an investigation. She waited months and months, and she said, what happened? They said, we did the investigation. Everything was done. She said, really? What happened? Nothing. We can't tell you.
Yeah,
so basically, the state police's argument is, we are not going to tell her anything.
That's
so now,
the Freedom of Information Act
now
is all about.
It's going to, like the appellate courts in the state of Maryland, to decide, can a police department say, no, we don't have to tell you anything, because for any normal citizen, you have a right to know that information. Can the police department withhold that information? So the Maryland ACLU has a case going on right now.
Great case. And the other thing is, this is also something where we can press the Justice Department, Eric Holder, Attorney General, to investigate where they withhold information. And you can focus on someone who actually, I think, does care about these things, but maybe needs some direction to do the right thing.
TESFA.
Hi, Tesla.
Tesla, you're
welcome.
On the air.
Good morning, my friend.
Good morning,
Tesla.
A problem gets solved when people protesting or are in the movement are all directly affected by the problem. This problem is not affecting everybody. It is affecting only a minority, black people. There is the emotion of the moment, the anger against what happened, but people live by their daily problems, and it will die down, and the problem will stay, will remain. And to solve this problem, people directly affected by it have to organize first. Black people have to organize themselves. It's not only here in America. It is in Congo. It is in Ethiopia. It is in Rwanda. A problem of black people is somehow connected to this racism, and we have to organize first. Black people have to organize first.
Thank you very much, Tess. We certainly appreciate that. Next, we have
Jabari.
You're on the air, Jabari. Welcome to WPFW.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Let's say something about grand. Yeah, I want to say something about the grand jury process, because a lot of people don't seem to understand how grand juries are supposed to work. When you're on a grand jury, you can do whatever you want to. The prosecutors do not control grand juries. The grand jurists control the grand jury. They are supposed to be able to control their own grand juries. And there are countless stories of history in the United States where grand juries basically did a lot of great things in spite of the prosecutors.
Jabari, have you ever sat on a grand jury? I'm just curious.
I've sat on petit juries.
Yeah, okay.
I was called.
I have two. I've sat on petit juries, which is the trial jury. Grand jury is a very different thing from a trial jury. Trial jury, you hear from both sides. Trial jury, there's cross examination. Trial jury, there's evidence withheld. In a grand jury, it is only a one-sided proceeding. The prosecutor tells the grand jury exactly what the prosecutor wants the grand jury to know. Usually they have maybe one witness, maybe someone else from the grand juror's office, maybe one investigator, and they tell an entirely one-sided story. Because you don't need a proof beyond a reasonable doubt. You just need a probable cause. 99% of the time, the grand jury does exactly what the prosecutor wants them to do. Maybe 1%, I'd say
no,
significantly
much
less.
More than
99%. Certainly less than 1% of the time they don't. But it's just to get the process started. I would argue there's no competent prosecutor in the country that can't get a grand jury to do what he or she wants them to do if the prosecutor wants it done. These prosecutors didn't want it.
Yeah, go ahead and finish, Jabari.
No, look, what I'm saying is that the way a grand jury is supposed to work, the grand jury is convened for a period of time, 3 months, 6 months, or whatever the time period they're convened.
That's
they're
right.
there to look at a whole bunch of different
hundreds
cases.
Of cases, right?
The grand jury can bring charges. The grand jury can bring charges against people that the prosecutor doesn't even bring to the grand jury.
Virtually never
the grand
happens.
Jury has, but the point is it never happens because people on the grand jury don't understand what the power of the grand jury is about. They think the prosecutor runs the grand jury. No, the grand jurors run the. They have the power to subpoena people. They have the power to call witness. Even in this Ferguson jury, they said that the jurors ask questions. We don't understand.
The reason the jurors ask questions is because the prosecutor in Ferguson did not want an indictment, and he wanted to push it on the grand jury, and so he used the grand jury basically to cover his CYA, and that's why they were asking questions, sir. I get your point. Your point is that it's possible, conceivable, legal for the grand jury to do right. all these things. That's all true, and I don't deny that, Jabbar. You're absolutely right. My point is, in practice, the grand jury is worked like a violinist works his violin. Any decent prosecutor can get a grand jury to do it. They say a prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich,
right.
and every prosecutor I've ever met says it's true.
Yeah.
Can I get a word?
Go ahead.
Thank you. The point is, this is not over. Any grand jury. Can bring charges again because they can convict these they can charge these people again. It's not over.
Well, you're saying
over.
Is true, but okay.
Pusher has to bring the case to the grand jury.
And
they
can't
indict somebody.
And so what we should be promoting, and I've seen one article that already promotes this. Just because there's no double jeopardy because nobody has been charged.
That's true.
These people are still liable. The thing in Ferguson, and most of us don't understand that, there's two pools of people that most jurisdictions use to get people, to select people on jury.
And if you could go ahead and wrap up, go ahead and wrap up because we got a couple other callers.
If I can talk.
No, go ahead and wrap up. We've given you, I want to be reasonable here, but we got some other callers, so if you could go ahead and wrap it up. I don't want to cut you off, but I wanted to ask you to wrap it up, please.
That's the biggest pools are driver's license and voter registration. So those people in Ferguson, because they don't register to vote or in D.C., they are not in the pool of people that are normally selected to be on these juries. And
okay.
because we choose not to be on these juries, we leave ourselves vulnerable to other people judging us.
All right.
That's a solid point. And that's why
people should register to vote
so they can be on grand juries and on trial juries.
Next, we got to have Mike. Mike, welcome. WPFW, you're on the air.
All right. I hear y'all still talking that same smack. But the system doesn't
And to make sure your radio's turned down. I think I hear your radio in the background, and that'll mess us all up with feedback. So if you can, turn that down.
The system doesn't work for us. Let's just get that straight for one.
I would disagree. I'd say the problem is the system does work. It's not that it doesn't. It's it does work exactly as the way
it
should.
Doesn't work for us.
Okay, go ahead.
First of all, I know some of us, when we get on the air, we want to promote our way of thinking. It doesn't work for us because of the day we wouldn't be having this conversation. This has been going on ever since we've been in this country. So I know what they do when they get a grand jury with some of you handkerchief heads and white, you're not going to find a white cop guilty because you're going to side with the system that doesn't, it's already been broken since we got here, but you're going to try to make up where it does work. If it does work, we still wouldn't have this problem. We'd have to go through voters' rights or human rights. So
what's your solution, Mike? What would you do?
It's my situation.
What would you do? What's your solution? What would you do?
First of all, the black people should join the NRA. Every black man in this country should have a gun.
So your solution is violence.
It's a violent country.
Right. So you'd start taking on police and the army?
Tubman didn't worry about that. Garvey didn't worry about that. Turner didn't worry about that. If you don't fight, you're dead anyway. So in order for black people to move forward, you got to have a militant stand. All this singing and dancing does not work for us as a people. Racism and white supremacy will stay as long as you, hate the head, keep trying to make us sing and dance a song, and then go home.
Would you consider Martin Luther King as part of that?
Yes, he was.
All right. At least you're consistent. Well, I think the 60s did achieve things. I don't think the 60s did nothing. I don't think the Voting Rights Act was nothing. I don't think the Civil Rights Act was nothing. I think nonviolence can work.
Well, I'll say this. Look, let me say this. If Martin Luther King was a handkerchief head, then I'm proud to be called a handkerchief head.
But he had his critics.
But let me say this.
There were plenty of people that wanted violent revolution in the 60s. And frankly, had more, even more ground for it.
In defense of our call, was that Mike? I think it was Mike.
That was Mike.
In defense of Mike. Look, you know, in my life, I've seen a lot of racism and a lot of discrimination, a lot of things that have made me very, very angry. And when people like Mike are very, very angry, I do sympathize and empathize with Mike. Because
anger.
If you go through a lot of crap and you see a lot of stuff, you turn on the TV and you see some black guy being strangled, shot every time you turn around. You know, it is a natural thing for people to be angry. And I understand that not everybody is going to be willing to say, let's move for peaceful Now, let me say this. Within, even if you look at what Martin Luther King did, if you look at what happens, there even is a place within change for people who are very angry and fomenting revolution, because those who are for peaceful revolution are always able to somewhat use them as a foil and say, hey, look, you can deal with me,
or you can deal
and
with
we
them.
Can come up with some kind of a, you know, something that works this thing out. Or those guys over there ain't going to be so friendly. So there is even a place for that level of anger, you know, and God forbid for those who would foment violence.
There's an old saying about revolutions. If you're going to go after the king, you better kill him.
Right.
Because if you go after the king, if you go after the system and you don't win, you're in worse trouble than if you didn't revolt at all.
Yeah, when you fight City Hall's going to fight back.
So if you're going to foment violent revolution, you better have enough support that you're going to win. And if you're a minority and you're just going to get mowed down and a bunch of people killed, you're actually making the situation worse.
And the truth is, my belief is, if you look at the history, oftentimes the revolutionaries are worse than those that they overthrew. If you look at the French Revolution, when people use violent revolution to overthrow, violence begets more violence. So now that they get in charge, what do you think they do with those who challenge them?
Exactly.
Because violent revolution is about an authoritarian way of thinking.
It's about
a way of saying, I will force the way I believe on others. I'm not going to try to change their minds. Darn it, you can't change their minds. I'm not going to try to work with them or strike them. I'm not going to do anything. I will attack them and I will force them to do. That's an authoritarian way of thinking. And if you think, if you have an authoritarian perspective on power, then when you get power, you keep that authoritarian. And when people come to you and say, well, you know, sir, we want a few changes. How dare you? Off with his head. You know, take the dog out and shoot him off with his head. So, yeah, that's it. Who do we have next? Mary. I hope it's the same.
Welcome, Mary.
Mary. Welcome.
Hello, guys. How are you doing?
Mary.
Thank you for calling in.
One of my favorite callers.
You guys are my favorite people, too.
Thank you, Mary.
And I hear Mike. I mean, I got a little Mike in me.
Yeah. Well,
me too.
I have an answer for Mike because I want him to take that passion and we can shut it down financially. See, that's what we haven't tried yet. Shut it down financially.
Boycotts?
You want to start with one store, start with Walmart.
Here.
There you go.
Ammunition. They sell a lot of ammunition, and they have a triple, quadruple rating with the NRA.
And they mistreat their workers. Walmart's a great target.
Yep.
So that's a great target to start with, and then we go straight to Wall Street. We need to shut it down, and we have the power. All you have to do is rethink Christmas, rethink Black Fridays, rethink Easter, rethink the fact that every holiday should have nothing to do with shopping spree.
You're going to have a hard time convincing an 11-year-old child not to want presents at Christmas. I think we can shut down Walmart. I just think shutting down Christmas, Mary, I just think it's a real uphill battle.
Little girl, you can't ride that bus right now.
Well, that's true.
Ride that bus
and the bus boycott was very successful. You make a very good point. I mean, economically, civil rights movement. I mean, the Montgomery bus boycott was, of course, before the March on Washington.
If we don't do that, then we're going to have to do what Mike says because, you know, enough is enough. I don't want to see another person killed that way at all. Thanks, Mary.
I like the idea of shutting down Walmart because Walmart's selling bullets. They're mistreating their workers. And I also like the idea. I mean, I think that there are things that we can – I actually already think the idea of body cameras, for example. I think that's – people are starting – I would say the majority of Americans across the country support body cameras.
And I think we can also get,
and people don't understand the issue enough yet, but with education, I think we get the majority of Americans to agree that when a police officer shoots an unarmed civilian, that we have a special prosecutor, a prosecutor that doesn't work with those cops every day.
Absolutely.
If it happens in Staten Island, get one from the Bronx. Get a prosecutor from Manhattan. If it happens in Ferguson, get someone from outside. I think we can win on that battle, too. See, I rarely think the cause is hopeless. I admit that. I've worked inside a power. I've worked outside power. And I think that
we can have optimism. Because if it's hopeless, you just throw your hands up and you lay down and die.
Well, yeah. And then,
you know, what's the point of that?
The riot is the language of the unheard. I think that you get out there and you advocate for specific changes.
All right, Mark, once again, if somebody wants to get in touch with you.
Go to marklevinetalk.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at marklevinetalk. Feel free to criticize me or whatever you want. Or praise me, just talk to me at MarkLevineTalk. You can also follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/MarkLevineTalk.
And I'm Garland N, the N is for Nixon, GarlandN@gmail.com. That's my email address, GarlandN@gmail.com. Garland Nixon on Facebook or at Garland Nixon. It's great having the name Garland Nixon. You can always use it. Nobody else. Yeah. At Garland Nixon.
I had to add talk between Mark Levine's out there, but there's only one Garland Nixon.
Yeah, at Garland Nixon on Twitter. And I actually found one. He died like 80 years ago in Cleveland.
But at any rate, rest in peace, old Art Garland.
That's right. Yeah. So there's. At any rate, Friday,
6 to 7 p.m.
The name of the show is News Views. Garland Nixon and my brilliant compadre here, Mark Levine, will be here this Friday.
This is WPFW News. I'm Askia Muhammad. Here are some headlines at the noon hour. A swarm of heavily armed police stormed a cafe in the heart of downtown Sydney, Australia, early Tuesday local time, ending a siege whose gunmen had been holding an unknown number of people hostage for more than 16 hours. A police spokesman confirmed, quote, the operation is over, but would not release any further details about the fate of the gunman or any of those who were inside. After a flurry of loud bangs, police swooped into the Lindt Chocolate Cafe. Shortly after 5 or 6 hostages were seen running from the building. Tens of thousands marched across the country on Saturday in the largest day of protest since the killing of Michael Brown set off a national movement 4 months ago. From Oakland to New York City, protesters called for indictments in the case of police officers who killed unarmed African Americans and broader reforms to policing and criminal justice. Here in Washington, the families of slain African Americans led by a Justice for All rally and marched on the White House and the U.S. Capitol. Among them were Leslie McSpadden and Gwen Carr, the mothers of Michael Brown and Eric Garner. Quote, "Thank you. What a sea of people. If they don't see this and make a change, then I don't know what we've got to do. Thank you for having my back," Leslie McSpadden said. Saturday's actions included a millions march that drew tens of thousands to the streets of New York City. A massive crowd took over the streets after gathering on Washington Square Park, heading uptown before turning around and closing at police headquarters downtown. A smaller group of thousands then broke off to march across the Brooklyn Bridge. A CUNY professor and poet taking part in the march was arrested for allegedly assaulting two police officers, including one who reportedly suffered a broken nose. In Boston, dozens of people were arrested in a protest